Okay, friends. Well, guess what? You've done it once again. You've clicked on yet another...
Kevin, another miraculous episode of V8 Radio.
That's appropriate because it's a small miracle that we're actually able to record this tonight. Because,
amen, brother.
Absolutely everything that has gone crazy has gone crazy. So, been a long time coming, but we're back in the saddle.
Good deal. Good to be back. And we're on location.
Yeah, we are. We are at the... V8 Speed and Resto Shop Oastie Home Garage for the first time this season again, because it's finally starting to get warm out again a little bit.
It is nice. It was a beautiful day today.
Yeah, 60-some degrees and sunny out, so...
I'll take it.
All day. But also, if you listen to this show every single episode, which I'm sure you do, you know that we start off every single episode of the V8 Radio Podcast... Did we say that that's what this is? Did I say this is the V8 Radio Podcast?
Well, I said it's another miraculous episode of V8 Radio. So I think they get it by now.
I'm your host, Kevin Oastie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Ubal-Clark, on this miraculous episode. So anyway, if you listen to the show, you know that we start off each and every episode with an automotive trivia question. And we throw the question out in the beginning and the answer out at the end. Have you, in fact, prepared a trivia question?
Well, I've had enough time to, so yes, I have.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Kevin, in the 1936 Ford...
Oh, yeah.
They had, on the driver and passenger door, they had a feature where when you would start to roll down the window, the glass would slide backwards. Like the lead edge of the glass would become exposed by about an inch and a half, 2 inches, and then it would roll down into the window channel.
Yeah.
What was the name of this marketing miracle by Ford?
Okay. So it didn't roll straight up and down. It pivoted.
It would slide back and then down.
Oh. Yeah, it slid back and then down.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was worthy of a marketing term. Is what you're telling me.
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, so they called...
It was on purpose.
I could see it being on purpose, but I didn't know what to name it. But if they... It was the backtracked.
The backtracked. Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I haven't had a whole lot of time to marinate on this.
Take your time, please.
So you're saying it was like a marketing name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was done on sales brochures and the whole shebang.
The down and out. I don't know.
Much like this episode.
Yeah, roll it and throw it. I don't know. I'm just going to call it the, what did I call it? The backtracked.
Backtracked.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Duly noted, sir.
All right, good. Okay, well, I got one for you.
Lay it on me.
This one could have bonus implications.
Uh-oh.
If we choose. So I've got four brands that are all no longer with us.
Okay.
I would like you to put their demise dates in order.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Okay. All right. And give me the brands.
And the bonus is if you can say what the last car was of each one. So here are the four brands.
Okay.
Pontiac.
Mm.
There's five brands. Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Mercury, Saturn, and Plymouth.
Oh, man.
Which one fell out first, and which four followed in what order, and then bonus for what vehicles, and I guess the super bonus is the year of each. Oh, my gosh.
So Pontiac, Olds, Saturn, and Plymouth.
And Mercury.
Mercury. All right.
Interestingly, two of those are planets. So if you're going to launch a car company after a planet, don't do it.
They are way out of here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all right. So Pontiac, their last year of production was 2009. And I believe, you want me to put them in order of their demise? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Or just give it, oh, the order. Oh, gee whiz.
Yeah. So you say Pontiac in 09.
Pontiac was 09. Olds was before that.
All right. So it'd be OP at this point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you got Mercury, Saturn, and Plymouth.
If I remember, Saturn met the same demise as Pontiac.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was 09 as well, when GM restructured.
So old Pontiac, Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
you're saying that was 09.
Gosh, I'm so not sure about Mercury or Plymouth.
What year do you think Oldsmobile crapped out?
I think Olds crap. Did they crap out in like 05 or 06?
05. June of 05? July?
Sure. June of 05, we'll say. All
right. 06, 05. And then you got Mercury and you got
Mercury and Plymouth.
Plymouth.
Shoot. Oh my gosh. This is a brutal question, dude.
I know it is, yeah. That's why they come here, man.
Yeah, they come here for the hard hitting questions.
They do.
Baby. Let's see. Mercury. Oh gosh. I'm gonna say 2010.
Mercury, so that's pretty recent.
Yeah, and then Plymouth, 2008, I'll say.
So it would be Mercury, or Plymouth before Mercury.
Yeah.
All right.
I think the last Pontiac, I think, was a G6.
I think
that came off the line.
The Pontiac was a G6.
Yeah, the rest of them I couldn't tell you. Olds, maybe a Bravada. No, we'll see. No.
No, not. Yeah, no.
No, nada?
Nada.
Say Bravada. Mercury.
Not a Bravada.
Mountaineer.
Ooh.
Saturn Ion.
Hold on a minute here. Mountain. All right. And a Saturn.
Saturn Ion.
Ooh.
And Plymouth. God, I don't even know what their models were. Plymouth Laser. How about that?
Ooh, Plymouth Laser. That was a Plymouth.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Okay, so to recap, friends, we have Oldsmobile being the first to be sent to a graveyard in the sky, the junkyard in the sky there with a Bravada in 605, followed by Pontiac, a G6 in 09. Saturn Ion went down in 09 as well, a Plymouth Laser in 2008. And a Mercury Mountaineer in 2010.
Final answer, man.
All right. Well,
duly note that.
Okay. We'll find out at the end of the show.
Mm.
That was a good one. Good answers.
Thanks. I mean, that was a tough question, but I'm glad I got through it.
I mean, we'll find out if it's a good answer or not.
Yeah, right. I felt really good about it, you know. Practice hard.
For sure. All right. Well, so it's been a little while since we did our last episode.
Yeah. It has been a little while.
What's the latest?
Well, I'm down here in Redbud this week, just hanging out at the shop, re-engaging with the crew, doing cool stuff, man.
Right on. It's been a busy part of the 2025 year season has already been very busy.
It has been. We are just crazy busy in the shop. It is. Insanity.
Well, that's strong. It's insanity. Right on.
But in a good way.
As we speak, Kelly is attending a SEMA Board of Directors meeting.
She is.
So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, gave us the impetus to hang out and do this episode. just because we were left our own devices tonight, which all failed at some point.
Pretty much every device failed.
But as we sit here at my garage, we're gazing out upon my 62 Galaxy convertible, you know, which has a fuel-injected 351 Windsor, and I asked you if I had told you the story of the recent tune-up on that thing.
You did ask me, and I said, I don't think so. So we'll save it for the show.
This was a perfect example of overthinking.
Oh.
A situation.
Okay.
And we do it all the time because I think we tend to look for the complex answer like before all the simple ones are exhausted sometimes.
Sure. You look for answers E, F, and G when you haven't looked at A, B, and C yet.
And I think a lot of that comes from, we deal with a lot of new parts.
True.
So there's an assumption that a new part is going to work.
There is that assumption.
So if something doesn't work, it's new. Maybe right. we're going to go to E, F, and G and dig deeper, when in reality it might be just the new part doesn't work.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, a couple years ago, this car started to develop a surge when you'd start it.
Okay.
So you turn the key. It's fuel injected. You turn the key. The fuel pump gets pressure. You'd hit the starter. It would start. The idle would rise as it's supposed to with the idle air control.
Oh, right. Yep.
And then it would kind of tumble down a little bit and hover. And if you put it in gear, it would die or come real close to dying.
Huh.
And then it would capture itself again. It would catch itself and come back up. And the rest of the day, you're fine.
All right.
So going to E, F, and G.
Sure.
It was, well, it's got to be something in the cold start EFI map.
Okay.
The fuel map. Maybe it's the initial ignition timing, because there's a different map for all of that.
Right.
With the fuel injection, you know, and it seemed to do it when it was cold and blah, blah, blah. So I went through the gamut. I mean, I tried to tune all that out of it and all the stuff. Even, you know, went to the kind of the basics of a fuel injection tune with setting the throttle position sensor in the right place, the throttle blade in the right place, you know, voltage, and then other general tune-up things like, you know, plugs and wires and air filter and all that jazz. Still doing it. And I was halfway, I mean, over several years, I got to the point.
Really?
Where I'm asking people, they're like, oh, yeah, you just got to, you know, do whatever. Uh-huh. And I would do whatever, and it didn't fix it.
Huh.
Never. And then finally, this past fall, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, you know, in my mind, this is a fresh car, but this engine's been in here for 22, 3, 4 years now.
Sure. Been in there a couple days,
We did this a while ago. And I thought, it's got a mass airflow sensor or an air mass meter, you know, however you want to say it. And it's a hot wire type, right? You know how those work?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's a little tiny hair wire, and as the air blows across it, it measures the rate, you know, the cool air cools the wire, and the computer measures how much power it's taking to keep that wire hot.
Keep the wire hot, yeah.
Right. And the more air goes across, the more energy it takes to keep it hot, which tells the computer how much air is coming in.
Correct.
And it's really kind of a crazy convoluted concept.
Right.
But they work, you know, they work well. And I thought, you know what I should do that I've never done? Maybe I'll clean the MAF sensor.
Oh, my.
So I took the MAF off and grabbed a can of carb cleaner. It wasn't EFI air MAF cleaner. It was just good old fashioned carburetor cleaner. And sprayed it on there and blew it out and, you know, sprayed the wire again and blew it out and let it dry for a couple of minutes and threw it on, and the thing starts perfect.
Oh, my gosh.
100%. It starts, finds its idle, hangs there, perfect idle. You put it in gear, it catches itself right back to where it's supposed to. Once it warms up, the idle comes back down and to warm idle, and magnificent.
Well, isn't that something? And how long were you fighting this?
I fought it for years. Oh, I mean, not like every day out here trying to fix it, but I put up with it for years.
Yeah. Nice. I was waiting for you to tell me you found like a vacuum leak or something.
Oh, no. We checked for all the vacuum leaks.
Oh, did we?
Yeah,
okay.
No leaky vacuum, no gaskets. No, I mean, it runs perfect. And I'm aggravated that I didn't think of it earlier, but then I take a little solace thinking that I did eventually think of that.
You did eventually.
You know, my neighbor didn't come over and go, look, dumbass.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Nobody else thought of it either.
Yeah.
When you were talking about your symptoms.
Right. I was just a little slow on the uptake. And, you know, I think we just tend to do that as hot rodders. We tend to go, it can't be that.
Right.
That's too simple.
Yeah, it's easy to dismiss something like that you don't even think could cause your issue.
Right. I just put this on 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's brand new.
How could it possibly be dirty?
Mm-hmm. I just put that on there.
It's harder to think because when we did this engine conversion, this car had a different dashboard in it.
Yeah.
It had the original 62 Ford dashboard. Mm-hmm. And then that came out, and I did an auto meter gauge set in the hole. So now the odometer changed from the original right. Ford, which didn't work when we got the car. So okay. I'm guessing this thing had 105,000 on it or so when we bought it in 1993.
Oh, boy.
And then I put the odometer down. Well, we drove it probably 10,000 miles maybe, and then changed the dash and drove it, I think, another... changed the dash and engine, and I think we put another 40,000 or so on
no
it.
No kidding.
So I think the engine and transmission combo is 45,000 on it, probably 44,000. So that's enough to gum up a MAF sensor.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Over two decades.
I'd say you were due for that little bit of maintenance.
Yeah. But, you know, time stands still on these things a lot of times.
Yeah. It kind of does. It's funny. You know, you have one of these and, you know, I drive my GTO, but I don't drive it that much. Yeah. And, you know, years will go by and maybe I'll put 5,000 miles on it. And you think, oh, I haven't hardly driven it, but it's still something that you put on maybe 5 years ago. It's maybe time to replace, regardless of miles.
But it's still new.
I just put it on.
I just remember buying this at the hardware store yesterday.
Exactly.
You know, it's like the headlights on this car. Same thing. These are 25-year-old bulbs now.
Oh, my.
And they still work, but they're, sure. You know, they're yellowing, and it's like I put the headlight relays in, and that helped.
Sure.
But again, I just put those in.
Mm.
And I really, you know, start to feel like my father. Once you change a light bulb, it's fixed forever.
Forever, yes.
Yeah.
It's new always.
Yeah. And then it dawned on me that on my daily driver over there, I put 12,500 miles on it the first year.
No kidding.
And I didn't really go anywhere.
Just from here to the shop, right?
Here to the shop. Well, I went to Chicago with it once. I went to Indy for the PRI show. Sure. And then I went to Kansas City for a SEMA Hall of Fame shoot.
Oh.
But really, I was like 12,000. And that's like average.
It's about average, yeah.
Yeah, dead nuts average. Mm-hmm. It's good I've achieved dead nuts average status.
You are. Quite a feat.
Yeah, it was a whole deal. But speaking of 62s, we brought in kind of a neat one, yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday it showed up.
62 Oldsmobile Starfire.
Convertible.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's beautiful.
It's a cool car.
Yeah.
It's baby blue with a blue convertible top.
Yep.
Blue interior.
Yep. Got hubcaps.
Yeah.
And that trim on the side is unbelievable.
Yeah, the Starfire was kind of the fancy pants Oldsmobile of the day, and it had a stainless trim that goes from the headlight to the taillight on both sides, and it's every bit of 5 inches wide.
Yep. And every bit of 20 feet long.
Yeah, and it's surrounded by a little, you know, framed out stainless surround as well. And if you have a Starfire and you don't have the trim, you have a problem.
Yes, you do.
You're not going to find that at the AutoZone.
Right. Maybe the O'Reilly's.
Yeah. And I haven't looked at it very deeply to know what engine's even in this thing. I think it's a 364, maybe.
Could be. It looks pretty stock. Everything is pretty stock on this car.
Yeah, yeah. And so do you know the story on it? Has he owned it long? I don't know much about it.
I think I read that he just got it. He got it a few months ago.
Okay.
And he wants to take care of all the little things on it. So.
That's pretty common. Another baby blue convertible we had was the Galaxy recently.
Oh, right.
And that was a 66.
67.
A 7, actually, yeah. Right, 67. Your neighbor's a 66.
Correct, yeah.
Also baby blue.
Also baby blue, yeah.
Convertible, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very popular.
Yeah. And the 67 Galaxy came in. He just bought that.
Correct.
And sent it to us, and it had a...
Had a 390.
Struggling 390 two-barrel.
Yeah, Cruiser-matic transmission. He wanted to put a crate engine in it and an overdrive transmission and do some other upgrades, some suspension upgrades, and just good drivability upgrades.
Yeah.
And he achieved that, and he loves the car. Every time we talk to him, he raves about how much he loves driving the car.
And that was a long road to take to not get that far. And the reason for it, what I mean by that is we did a crate engine in that. It was, I don't remember where we got that particular crate engine, but it was an engine transmission combination, and the transmission ended up having a leak, right?
Yes.
It was a 4R70W.
Correct.
So it's the same transmission I have in mine.
Mm-hmm.
Great electronic overdrive, four-speed, very strong Ford unit. But that one ended up being carbureted. It was not fuel injected.
It came carbureted. I think we put fuel injection on it.
There was talk, and we didn't do it.
Oh, okay. Then we didn't.
Yeah, and we did some suspension improvements, mm-hmm. Rebuild parts and wheels and tires and some brake upgrades mm-hmm. and stuff. And it drove wonderfully when it was done. But the EFI part was kind of funny because as this thing is getting ready to go home after we did all the work to it, it's sitting in front of the shop, and I was going to take it around the block to just double check, a little mm-hmm. final opinion, which sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. Mm-hmm. There are times when I'll drive them and find something, and it's like, that would have been nice to know 2 weeks ago before it's the day to go home.
Before the departure paperwork has been filled out.
But, sorry. But at the same time, I asked Trevor, I said, okay, do I need to know anything on this car? Because I'm going to take it around the block mm-hmm. and... of course, I'm insured on it. The crew that is sure. allowed to drive is all good to go and legit. But he's like, nope, no special instructions, which I love. That's mm-hmm. what we want with these things.
Yeah.
And I get out and sit in the car and I adjust my mirrors. I'm looking at everything and check gauges and I turn the key and crank it and it doesn't start. And I'm like, oh man, really? And I crank it again. It's not starting. I'm going to give this one more. It's because it's cold outside. It was like 25 degrees outside.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to crank this thing, and it is not starting. And I come in, and I tell Trevor, I'm like, I know it's really cold out. Do we need to modify the fuel map on this thing? Because it is not starting. And he goes, yeah, you need to modify it with your right foot and step on the choke because this has a carburetor.
I can hear Trevor saying that. You need to modify it with your right foot.
So I'm like, okay, duly noted. Okay.
That's so awesome.
So I went out in front and stepped on the choke and turned the key and it lit right off.
How about that?
Yeah. And then I came in. I was like, wow, a great tune on this carburetor. And he's like, I know. Knucklehead.
That's flipping hilarious.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, I think I got thrown because we include a sheet when we do this kind of upgrade or work that says this car is carbureted and here's how to start it,
mm-hmm.
or this car is fuel injected and here's how to start it. And in my mind, I remember the conversations about fuel injecting this one, and I saw that sheet and I thought that must be the EFI instructions, which I know. You turn the key, you don't touch the pedal.
Sure.
Listen for the pump, and let it go. But didn't happen on that one.
Well, well, well.
Yeah, yeah. And then something else just came in. A Blazer came in.
Yeah, a 77 K5 Blazer.
Yeah. That's a pretty cool-looking truck.
Yeah, another blue vehicle.
Convertible.
Yeah, light blue, convertible-ish. Yeah, take the back hard top off. That's got an old GM Performance 350 crate engine from way back in the day. It's just coming in for some drivability issues, not running real well. The choke needs to be looked at.
The fuel injection, you mean?
Exactly. The fuel injection needs to be looked at. But it says it hesitates when he drives it sometimes, and he wants all the, those kind of kinks worked out of it.
Yeah. Well, good. We're sometimes good at straightening those kinks out.
Yeah. So a lot of people sometimes think that's all we do are like full ground up restorations, and that's not the case. I mean, yeah, we have some in the shop, but we also do, minor tune up, minor work, suspension upgrades, brake upgrades, tune ups, things like that.
On classic,
yeah, and muscle car vehicles,
enthusiast vehicles, I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny because like the word out on that gets out from our shop is, it's done through this podcast and done through our videos and, social media and whatnot. And of all of the digital platforms, I am the least a fan of Yelp.
Oh, Really?
I do not like Yelp.
Oh, do tell.
Well, Yelp, to me, has its place. Like, if you're rolling into a city you've never been before and you need to find a restaurant that's open, like, now, close to you, Yelp all day. You don't wake up one morning and go, I'm going to have my car restored. I'm going to look at Yelp and see where the closest shop is. Yeah, it just doesn't happen. And the Yelp people have been relentless to try and get us to advertise and pay them. And they're like, we'll generate all these leads for you. And I'm like, every lead you've ever generated for me has been wrong. Right?
Nice.
I have a 2009 Saturn Ion. And it's not shifting, you know, and I want the windows tinted. We're not your shop.
No.
That's how we do.
True.
So it's a lot of time to, and we always try to refer people. Yelp should be paying me, for crying out loud. Because every time somebody contacts us, we refer them to somebody who can actually help them. So for a while, I just said, forget it. I'm just going to not respond or not do anything with Yelp. Well, then I learned that Apple is in bed with Yelp, or the other way around. And when you go to your Apple map and look up a business, it pops up the Yelp review and the Yelp.
Get out of here.
It uses Yelp as the content source for stuff. So here, now I have to do stuff with it to show recent pictures and, you know, things, which is only going to perpetuate more people not understanding what it does.
Come on.
Yeah. But I think part of that is where, you know, sometimes like in our Google page, Google business page, you know, we try to show pictures of the complete builds or a car in the paint booth or, you know, something in our interior shop. But no, we end up doing a lot of maintenance and upkeep on vintage and classic cars.
Actually, a good example of that is the 76 El Camino that we're wrapping up, because that wasn't a ground up restoration. We did a lot of improvements, a lot of drivability improvements on this.
Yeah.
But not a full restoration by any means.
No, customer didn't want that. Right. And that was a fun story because the customer's a really good friend of ours. This is the second vehicle we did for him. And we're getting ready to start the third one. So nice repeat customer, and we appreciate that. He's fun to work with. And he one day contacts me, and he's like, and he's a European dude, and he's like, I want the 76 El Camino. And I'm like, really? So who had one of those? You know, was somebody in your family had one, or, you know, your dad or whatever? No, I just always like them. So that body style doesn't have a whole lot of enthusiast following.
It does not.
And the bummer is, it's not the car's fault, you know, because the car is actually pretty cool. It's a great platform. It's the evolution of the GMA body, you know, and before it turned into the G, I guess. But 1976 in particular, 75, 6, 7, these are the smug era.
Oh, yeah. They never had a chance.
No, they were regulated into oblivion. Mm-hmm. So low power, you know, low compression, and just the malaise era is what they're calling. And they're just kind of
all carbureted. All the right foot modulation.
Well, and at the time, you know, the American automakers, at least, didn't know how to make those cars make the best of the limitations they had. So they just choked them down. They took compression out of them. They put catalytic converters on them to choke the exhaust down even more. And then they're like, we need to eke out even a little more fuel economy, because it was a double-sided sword. You had the emissions laws coming in, and then you had the competition from smaller cars on fuel economy. So they had to make them run cleaner and get more to the gallon without really knowing. They didn't have advanced controls.
Correct.
And the disadvantage is it's three times the size of a Datsun pickup truck.
Right.
And it's a Chevy El Camino. It's a car, you know. So they put like a 270 gear in it, or like a 258, you know, highway gear. So this thing was just a slug of a dog.
Yeah, it was a 305 at that in there, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that was the last, you could get a 454 in that thing, but it was horrible too.
Yeah.
It was
just 180 horsepower.
Yeah. So we knew right away that we were going to ditch the motor on that thing and change the driveline. So the challenge became finding a clean 76 El Camino, and I found that car in Arizona, so it was not a rusty car.
Right.
I think it originally lived in Florida.
Oh, Okay.
Because we traced back the previous owner and I talked to him and whatnot. But that's, you know, not to the same degree of the Starfire, maybe close. Mm-hmm. There's trim on that El Camino that's really hard to find.
Yeah, there was a piece of trim that I was tasked with finding, a lower rocker trim right in front of the rear wheel opening that I never could find it. Brian had to find it.
Did Brian find it? Yeah. I knew it's on there now. Yeah. So somebody found one. So we got the car in and, you know, kind of did the cost benefit of, you know, we could put an LS3 in this thing pretty easily, mm-hmm. make it 500 horsepower, you know, do a really cool transmission and everything else. And then, you know, the owner's like, yeah, I want it to perform better than it does, but I don't know that I want to go that far with it. Mm-hmm. So we did a 383 stroker GM performance crate.
Right.
And a Holley Terminator X EFI mm-hmm. system on it and a 4LEDE automatic overdrive, QA1 suspension all the way around.
Right.
And Wilwood brakes. And Dakota digital gauges and a retro sound stereo in it, mm-hmm. and then detailed it and put some their 18-inch Chevy Rally.
Yes.
Made by Vision Wheel with some Continental tires, kind of touring tires, touring right. suspension, and then fixed a bunch of other little crazy things, the door hinges and the glass right. alignment and... And then Toby, our detailer, polished it all up, mm-hmm. and it turned out to be a ton of fun. Just a cool car.
It's kind of a cooler car now.
It is. Yeah. It sits right. It handles great. It's super comfortable. And we released a video on that one a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I was tasked with making a video about a car that isn't necessarily a calling card for us.
True.
You know? And
true.
We have this wonderful scenario that occurs. Like we'll build a car and do video on it. And fortunately people watch the video and they like it and mm-hmm. they like what we do. And then they contact us and they mm-hmm. say, hey, I watched you do this. I would like to have one also. And in fact, the customer that we're talking about came to us because the first car we did for him was an LS swap 72 Corvette Roadster.
Uh-huh.
And he watched right. us in a video doing a 69 Corvette Roadster LS. And he watched that video and contacted me. He said, I want one.
Nice.
It works. You know, it's that's, it's phenomenal to get interest from enthusiasts to contact you to say, I like what you guys do. I want you to do something for me. Mm-hmm. But we have to watch ourselves sometimes because, you know, we weren't necessarily prepared to have the shop fill up with mid-70s El Caminos if, you know, all the people saw the video
right.
that liked those cars, you know. I wouldn't turn them away, but it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, what direction do we want everything to go in?
Sure.
So when making the video on this car, what story are we going to tell about it? And I kind of split this up into three different sub-segments. And the first one was, you know, 1976 was an interesting time here in the USA.
It certainly was. Yeah, the bicentennial. I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a six-year-old kid during the bicentennial. I remember hanging out with my friends, and we watched all the great fireworks. And it was a cool time, super patriotic time to be alive.
Yeah, everything was red, white, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also kind of a strange, you know, time for style because colonial architecture was in. Mm-hmm. So you had a lot of columns and stuff like that.
Yep.
That whole malaise style was in with cars. You had a lot of nautical themes in clothing and in architecture and design. So like, if you remember, like restaurants had like raw rope
oh, sure.
and a lot of life preservers.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? That was real popular. And like Buicks, for example, had silver face gauges that they almost looked like a ship steering wheel. Like all they needed was like the thing sticking off of them, and it would have been like
at the helm.
So it was kind of strange what was going on with a mm-hmm. lot of that design. Plus the bicentennial, so In the video, I found a bunch of vintage footage from 76 and commercials in particular. Mm-hmm. And one of them that I loved was McDonald's did red, white, and blue shakes.
Now that I don't remember.
Yeah. And then like NBC News, the whole news desk was like red, white, and blue yeah. striped, like Uncle Sam's pants threw up on it, you know? And everything had a Free Spirit edition or a Bicentennial mm-hmm. edition or Spirit of 76.
Yep.
And Chevrolet was doing the baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet
yep.
theme, you know, commercial campaign, which I loved. I
yeah.
still sing that today. So I thought, let's kind of celebrate that in the video and then work the Camino in. And then we talked about what we did to the car. And then at the end, we actually created a playlist of 1976 musical
oh,
releases
right.
that
That's
came
right.
out. And 76 was a huge year
yeah.
for rock and roll music. I didn't realize.
Well, I loved how you did that in the video, running through the songs like it was a KTEL record commercial.
Yeah,
was,
right.
That was really, really cool. That really took me back.
Well, that was courtesy of our video editor, Mr. Eric Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I planted the seed, and I said, I'm going to go down a list of some of the top records, put a graphic on screen, and it looked just like one of those old record club commercials.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, kudos to him.
So we actually put that playlist on our website, too. So it's v8speedshop.com/76, and it takes you to the landing page of the El Camino, where you can see all the photos and see everything we did, and, you know, tune into the top 100 of 1976. There's good stuff there. It's Frampton Comes Alive.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got Boston's first record, and
yeah.
you've got... Tom Petty's first record, and you got, you know, the Kiss live album. I mean, it's just, it's insane.
Captain and Tennille.
I didn't, sure. But I think there is some Neil Sedaka in there.
There you go.
So it turned out to be a lot of fun. And the response so the message was, you know, it doesn't really matter what the car is. There's ways to make them perform better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're enthusiastic about something that's different, that's awesome. You know, we love that.
Yeah.
And we proved that we took a car that is not really regarded as something that's, you know, I don't want to call the end result like high performance,
mm-hmm.
but a great driving car.
Yeah.
That's just a lot of fun.
A good performer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had decent power, good torque, and the alignment we put in it and the suspension we put in it, it goes down the road super comfortably. And I was real happy with it.
Well, good.
So hopefully people come to us with, you know, I'm not going to mind if we get a bunch of El Caminos a call, but what I want is for people to say, hey, I've got a, you know, 73 Imperial, you know, what can we do to that? It's almost a challenge.
That would be a challenge.
You know, how can you make this overlooked sled be enjoyable to drive by applying today's technology to it? And and those cars are really cool. Now, don't get me wrong, I love to build the hot rods and the customs and you know, all the rest of it
for sure,
but I think there's a market segment in there, and that El Camino, it was a rust-free car that we bought. It was not expensive by comparison.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I'm sure it wasn't.
Yeah. And it's going to deliver all the fun that a, you know, 69 Malibu would at a far less of a buy-in.
That's a win.
All the same, you know, strategy applies to both.
Sure,
and,
for sure.
And fortunately, there's parts for both. So,
yeah.
So that was really cool.
That was really cool. Yeah, we've had a lot of, you know, really cool, a few odd projects. I mean, that 1980 Dodge Murata comes to mind.
For sure.
Yeah, that was... you know, not your typical car restoration.
Yeah.
And you guys did pretty much everything to that.
We did everything to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't rebuild the engine, but that was a 318 in that one, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. We put a carburetor and a cam and an intake and I think a set of heads on it. And then repainted the whole thing and redid the interior and had the gauges redone, had the original wheels restored. That's
cool.
Phenomenal on that car, because they were a cast turbine style, you know, 1980. Was it an 81? I think it was an 81, the Murata.
Was it an 81 Murata?
I think so.
Okay. Could be.
80, 81. And there's a shop that we deal with that media blasts the wheels and then uses automotive paint to paint the centers and then fixtures that on a CNC machine and recuts the...
They cut the face.
The machine face and then clear powder coat the whole thing. And it made them brand new.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That was a detail. People were looking at this car and they're like, oh, yeah, I think I remember those. And they're like, oh, wow, that one's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Oh, the paint looks really cool. Look at the wheels. Where did you find this car? You know, and the guy's had it since new. That was his car.
That's what's really incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And he trusted us to make his car new again.
Very nice.
And I remember chatting with him. We were talking about, you know, that it takes some investment to do a car all the way. And
for sure.
The car doesn't, you know, there's a guy I know who's got a restoration shop in California. And he's like, you know, it could be a Pinto or a Ferrari. They might cost the same to restore, you know, depending on what they are.
Sure.
Time and labor. And,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about the Murata. And he's like, well, look, if I look at this, I bought it new in, say, 1980. Mm-hmm. And it's 30 years later at the time, you know, 35 years later. How many other cars could I have rolled through? And if you add up how much I would have spent on all those cars, mm-hmm. I'm coming in ahead on this one.
It's a great way to look at it. And you have the car you love still.
Yeah. Yeah. And he spec'd it when he ordered it. This was his car, you know, did it for him. So I thought that was really cool.
That is really cool. Yeah. Another oddball one that we've had in the shop was that 67 Excalibur.
Oh, yeah. And that was one of 17.
Yeah. How incredible is that?
I think it was 16 or 17. There's two of them in this town.
That's the real crazy
267s. Stat. Yeah. The other one's a stone's throw from this house.
Is that right?
Right over there. Right over there in the woods is where the other... And it's silver. It's nice. We had them both parked in the same spot one day.
Really?
Yeah. It was like 20% of the entire 67 Excalibur population ever built in one place.
One spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a weird one, too, that Excalibur had... Those were done by Studebaker engineers that when Studebaker closed, they took a Studebaker Lark chassis, basically, and stretched the frame and put a Corvette 327 in it.
Yeah, that was another interesting one to find parts for.
Yes, but not a kit.
No, it's not a kit.
It was a car.
Yeah, it was a real car, yeah.
Yeah.
A real VIN and everything, yeah.
So we're a few weeks into our friend Ziggy Sadler working with us at the shop. And
yeah.
Ziggy's kind of finding his way and helping out with wherever he can. So if you heard our last episode, we chatted about Ziggy for a minute coming over from Australia. And we're going to get him on the podcast as a guest eventually. Mm-hmm. But he's still kind of shell-shocked of the U.S. walking around our shop.
Crikey!
Yeah. But he seems to be enjoying it, and he's been extremely helpful.
He has been very helpful.
And especially bringing some cool techniques to the body shop team to bring our game up even higher, which is great.
It is great. Yeah, he's been really enjoying it. I know he really likes it here. He enjoys everybody's company. Everyone's been really cool to him. He's a great addition to the team.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're very fortunate that was quite a leap that he took coming from Australia to
for sure
the middle of the U.S. And we're all, you know, you don't know how things are going to go. And again, I've known him for a long, long time, so I wasn't expecting any surprises.
Right.
But we're just happy to see that, you know, you can't accurately describe what the working environment is to somebody on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
You know, until they come here and get involved for a little while and try it on.
Sure.
And we try to represent, like, what our strengths are and where we want him to bring something to the table. And he seems to have, you know, not only understood that, but identified that same thing, and he's up for it. He's like, yeah, let's do this. So,
and that's the right attitude. You just have to have a can-do attitude and be able to jump in with both feet. And not only do you have a hard time explaining that to somebody on the other from another country, but it can even be difficult from somebody on the other side of the state. Like you and I have been friends for a long time, and we've talked about the shop, but you don't really understand what it's like until you're thrown into it, and you know you got to do it. You got to pivot quickly and figure things out, and You know, this is the real, this is the big leagues. This is what's happening.
Well, you got thrown into it.
Yeah, I did.
And so did he.
Sure.
and hopefully we didn't misrepresent.
No.
The worst thing is when you show up somewhere and you're like, this isn't anywhere near where you said this was going to be.
This sucks. No. Yeah. That phrase has never come out of my mouth.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
sometimes, that. Sometimes, like, I was like, this is hard sometimes, and this is a little stressful, and how am I gonna accomplish this?
Yeah.
But that's, I like the challenge, and it's very rewarding when you get things to pan out.
Yeah, and the rest of the team seems to be gelling with Zig real good. And,
for sure.
You know, value his experiences, and it's cool. We're very fortunate to have the people in this organization that we do.
For sure. Definitely.
You know, I've done some traveling this month already. One trip was unplanned to help my mom, and that's all fine. And the other trip was one that I had planned to go see some friends and you know, chat with other people about challenges they have in their businesses and some of the people challenges. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are we lucky? we don't have problems. We have things to overcome and challenges to conquer and, you know, work to do and all that, but we don't have problems.
Yeah, and the difference is everybody is here to help overcome those challenges. Everyone's in it 100%.
Yeah. And that's great, you know, and it's great to hear. And I try to be here as much as I can to help everybody out. And I know when team members get frustrated, you know, the golden rule there is if they didn't care, they wouldn't get frustrated.
That's for sure, 100%.
Yeah. So when I see somebody who's kind of banging their head against the wall and we sit them down and talk to them and say, what's going on here? It's because they feel they can't get it done to expectation or the time, or they feel like they want to do more, whatever, any number of things, but none of them are, this place sucks and so do you. I don't care.
Right.
So I'm walking out because that's what happens. So, you know, I got to remind myself of that. The reason why things go well is because the people do right and they care about stuff.
They care about it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a great crew.
Yeah.
I mean, it's phenomenal right now. So, hope it keeps up.
It will.
Yep. Amen.
Lots of other cool projects coming in, lining up. What's the skinny on that Bronco? Are we doing a chassis swap on one? Is that it?
Yeah.
Are planning, talking to somebody about one?
Yeah, we are talking to a chassis provider about that. It's what year Bronco is that?
It's like a mid-70s, right?
Yeah.
Early 70s.
Yeah, and they're looking to put it on a full custom chassis.
Yeah. And so, a Coyote or a
Benzer?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thing. Coyote.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's gonna be an interesting one.
Yeah. Well, we've been through that already. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
And those, they don't call them Broncos for no reason. I mean, that short wheelbase, and especially if you put some power behind them,
sure.
It's a ride.
A real handful.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
So that's cool. Right. And, you know, getting back to the story of the Corvettes, speaking with another gentleman about doing a 69 coupe, not a roadster, but another coupe. And this is a fun challenge for a shop because I don't know that we have this car yet. We're just early in the conversation. This gentleman approached us at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals after they saw the blue 69 Roadster we had there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's the kind of the top level conversation in the very beginning where it's like, hey, I like Corvettes, you know, let's talk about maybe building one. But then when you know, it's our mission to get to know more about what this person is going to do with the car and what their ideal day is with the car and really kind of get a feel for what the motivation is. And I had a conversation with this gentleman today and learned a couple things. One, he seems to have a pretty extensive Corvette collection ranging from, you know, early 60s C2s up to C8s.
Wow.
So he knows Corvettes.
Sure.
And doesn't necessarily want a stock, you know, original numbers matching Bloomington Gold car. He's got that already.
Sure.
He wants something he can get in and drive and go have fun with that looks like a 69. And mentioned like C7 suspension level performance and comfort.
Okay.
And a lot of power, and he likes the sound, and he wants the steering and the brakes. And but at the same time, his wife goes with him, and she needs to be comfortable too.
Sure.
So, you know, for me, I love that because there are some places that will straight up say, well, you'll never get that old car to do that.
Uh-huh. You know? You watch me.
Well, that's just it.
Yeah.
Now that we know that that's the yardstick we're being measured against, we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it takes resources and time and engineering and parts and
sure.
smarts and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But if everybody's on board, yeah, we can do this. And especially great to know that he plans on traveling with his wife and she has her requirements as well, so we can build that in
mm-hmm.
instead of just not asking those questions.
Yeah.
And saying, we restuffed your seats that are, you know, basically planks,
yeah,
park benches, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
And then to me, there's nothing worse than getting the car home and saying, yeah, I kind of really like this car, but I'm not comfortable in it, so I'm just not going to drive it.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's sad. I mean, it's a bummer is what it is.
Well, it's time and money that don't pay off.
Mm-hmm.
It's an investment and all that you don't get to reap the rewards.
Sure.
So I'm not the guy that talks to customers day in and day out. Joe does, you do, mm-hmm. Brian does, Trevor does, Ziggy does. But I get the opportunity here and there to get to know the customer. So I put all those notes in today, and now we're getting a more complete picture of what this thing's going to be. And I think it makes the customer excited to know that we're asking this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And it makes the team excited to know what the challenge is. And I hope we get this one because it's going to be a neat car.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think, by us asking those questions, maybe he didn't even think that that's a question to be asked. And by saying, you know, what about XYZ? Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
And that could have just, you know, been sideways.
For sure. And in many ways, I don't think he really thought that what he was asking for was possible.
Because
he's like, well, here's what I want. And I love that, too. If you want something, tell us what you want.
Sure.
And we'll help you get there if it's possible or not. And possible in the timeline and possible in the budget.
Right.
But there are people that say, you know, they shortchange their dream car. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm okay with it being red, and you know, I'd like to have a carbureted V8, and that's cool. And in the back of their mind, they're thinking, I want this thing to be metallic gold
yeah.
with a tri supercharged, you know, Pontiac V8 sticking out of the hood. Well, if you tell me that, we can get
yeah.
you there, or
yeah.
we can tell you. It's going to take this,
right.
and then let's start working back out of it.
Let's do it in stages here, then.
But this gentleman was like, you know what I like? I like sound. I like to find the limits of every car that I own. I want to know what the red line is. And he said, this was interesting. He said, I want to achieve the red line in the car.
Nice.
At speed.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because there are some cars that, you know, it might have a 7,000 RPM red line,
sure.
but it doesn't have the power in top gear.
To get it there in top gear, right? Yeah.
Well, he wants all that. Awesome.
Done.
Yeah. Now I know what we need to
yes,
do here.
Yes, please.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're doing a high power LS,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do, you know, the right gearbox and the right suspension. And, you know, he mentioned control and braking, and it's like.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm just drooling. So
yeah.
I really appreciated that opportunity to learn what the lofty goal is.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to start going back and forth and seeing what's possible on a realistic standpoint. Instead of building something and then it's, nah, boy, I really wish I would have
yeah.
put a different engine in this.
Yeah, that's I don't like that kind of regret.
And, you know, it's and not, I guess it's regret to a point. Anything's redoable,
mm-hmm.
you know, like my Galaxy sitting here is a 351 Windsor in, it's fuel injected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could put a tri-power, you know, 3-deuce yeah. FE in it.
Sure.
If I wanted to. It's, you know, it's not... It's contrary to what I said before. You put the light bulbs in, you can change the light bulbs. It's just a matter of if you want to do it. So
sure.
But, well, that's cool. Just, like I said, very excited that there's so many cool things going on. We are launching another video this week of one of our premium restoration cars.
Ooh.
Which was the 73 Plymouth Duster.
Right, right. The Duster.
Yeah.
That was a long time coming.
It was a long, it was, I think, our longest project chronologically. And it wasn't necessarily because it took us that long. It was because of the customer requirements of, you know, what he could do. And we were just super happy that it went all the way and got finished and came out as nice as it did. It was a beautiful car.
It really is a beautiful car, man.
Yeah. And a 73 Duster 340, you know, it was, I guess it was B5 blue originally, a medium blue with white 340 stripes on the side and a white interior, black carpet.
Yeah. Good looking car.
Silver Mopar rally wheels. And it was just beat and rusty and smoked when we got it.
Yeah.
And we replaced a lot of sheet metal on it and floors and quarters and trunk floor. And
yeah. I remember one time Paul and I came down to visit the shop. This is, you know, way before I ever worked here. And you had, I don't think you had been in this, in your location you're in now all that long. And that car was there with like the quarter panel gone. And, you know, it was on a jig. And I'm like, holy cats, what's that going to be when it grows up?
Yep.
You almost couldn't tell what it was.
Well, that shot is in this video.
Is it?
Of half the side of the car gone.
Nice.
You know. And it was fun because it was getting restored, but also not a chalk mark overspray correct restoration. It's what I like to call our premium restoration, and that is, you know, looks original but far nicer than it ever was. And a few day two modifications, you know, meaning like 70s period performance upgrades. Although we put aluminum heads on it and a roller cam, and but it's still carbureted with, you know, traditional ignition on it and headers, and it's an automatic. But Jeff in the paint shop really hit the home run with the color, because that Chrysler blue, or you know, on its own is a great color, but he wanted to really kind of jazz this thing up a little bit. So he started with a 2009 Range Rover SUV color. It's a super limited production car that had a medium blue, and then he added a little bit of pearl and a little bit of Jeff Razzmatazz that he does.
Jeff Razzmatazz.
Yeah, that's it. And the next thing you know, you've got this unbelievable pearly blue. You know, it's like the greatest sky at the best baseball game you've ever been to.
Sure.
You know. And it's got some sparkle in it, but it's not like Disco Fabulous Bass Boat. You know, and it just looks like it belongs, but it's like, wow, if those cars looked like that when they were new, they would have sold 50 billion Dusters.
For sure.
And then we redid the interior in a crisp white, you know, and all the chrome was redone and all the trim polish and the new stripes. And one of the most interesting details I thought on that car is that around the taillights and between them, there's a white decal. So the stripes are stickers on that car.
Sure.
And we did stickers again to kind of make it, you know, have that original feel. But I remember growing up, you know, because Dusters and Darts and, you know, those
Valiants,
they rusted away.
Oh.
Badly.
On the factory floor.
Yeah.
The showroom floor, they rusted.
You know, and especially a guy like me who grew up in the Midwest and the Chicago area, those things were, you know, ticking time bombs.
Yeah. Well, I had a Duster living in Texas, and it was rusty.
You had a ruster down there.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. Well, I had a 75 Plymouth Scamp that my dad bought for $250, and I inherited from my sister, basically. And it was root beer brown with a tan gut, 225 slant six.
Sure.
And I was going to make a hot rod out of that thing, and I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, and I ground off a lot of the paint to strip this thing. And as the Bondo is turning into dust, there's no steel behind it.
Oh, my.
I mean, this thing was literally sculpted in plaster. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, so when you get into one of those cars, it's like, this could have some problems. But by Jeff doing that color, and I remember that decal on the back of those cars when they were new was never placed right. It was always offset to the left or right. The gap around the taillight to the stripe was weird or was on an angle. Not this one.
Mm-hmm.
We had some help on the decal installation by a partner shop down the street from us called Total Eclipse that does our window tinting and our stripe graphics and stuff. And Ronnie White's the guy who he's the guy.
The guy.
Yeah, and he does just an amazing job. And I remember he was putting that stuff on, and I was like, holy cats, did that make a big difference?
So, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, look for that video on the 73 Duster. If you don't subscribe to VATV, you should.
You should.
That's where you'll find it. Mm-hmm. It's also going to go out on Muscle Car of the Week.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's apropos.
Yeah, right. I think that crowd will dig
that
it.
That qualifies. Mm-hmm. 340 Duster.
For sure.
Those are screamers.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one was a great example. So, So speaking of screamers.
Oh, tell me.
I got your trivia question answers.
Oh, let's have it. Oh, I'm going to scream. No!
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember what you asked
me. All right, so I asked you about 1936 Ford.
Oh, yeah.
That had the window that slid backwards when you first started cranking it down, and then it rolled down. And what was the marketing name for it?
Yeah.
That feature. And you said, backtracked.
Did I? That's
you
dumb.
You did. Yeah. You should work in marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
The term Ford coined was clear vision ventilation.
That's not that catchy.
It probably didn't. Why they don't have it today?
Clear vision ventilation.
Well, and your 1936 Ford.
Ford had a thing with seeing clearly, and this might be something actually a rabbit hole to go down, because in the 60s. Again, using my Galaxy sitting right here, it had a, what we joke about is basically a colostomy bag for a washer fluid container, right? It had like a hot water bottle bag.
Yeah, right. You
know? It wasn't a glass bottle or anything. Chevrolet had a glass bottle. GM had glass bottle. Ford had this plastic bag. Mm-hmm. And on the bag, it was written, see clearly. And so maybe there was a thing about clarity with old Henry there.
Maybe.
Huh, well, I got that wrong.
Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah.
And speaking of getting them wrong.
There it comes.
There it is.
Okay. So I asked you to put these former American automotive brands in order, in the order that they were shut down in, the bonus being the year and the extra bonus being what was the last car of each. Mm-hmm. And you said... first was the Oldsmobile brand got shut down in June of 05 with...
what do I know?
Well, actually...
Clearly nothing.
Yeah, and an Olds Bravada, which was like... That was like a Blazer SUV thing.
It was.
And then next would have been the Plymouth Laser and the Plymouth brand ending in 2008. Mm-hmm. And then he said Pontiac and Saturn... tied in 09 with the G6 and the Saturn Ion, and your last guess would have been the Mercury Mountaineer and the Mercury brand bowing out in 2010.
That's what I said.
That's what you said. Okay, well, the actual, right, is Plymouth was the first one out with a Neon in 2001.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, that ship has sailed.
It sure has.
Off to Plymouth Rock or whatever.
It sunk.
Yeah. Next out was Oldsmobile, 2004, with the Alero.
Alero.
Yeah. Which was like a...
What did I say, 05?
Yeah.
Ah, dang it.
But that was similar to a Buick Regal at the time.
Yeah.
That little body style. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up was the... Pontiac and Saturn were the same year. And I'm a little unclear, so you might be right on this. I had 2010 model years.
I thought it was 09 model years for Pontiac. I was pretty certain about that.
I think it ended in 09, but it might have been a 10 model. I don't know.
Maybe.
But it was a G6, so you got that right. The Saturn Aura in 2008.
Aura. Oh, I remember that pile. All right.
What color is the aura of
brown.
A pile? Yes, it's brown. Brown aura.
Nice.
Which left the last brand standing being Mercury.
Mercury.
Which was in the order that you said. Except it was a 2011 Grand Marquis.
No way.
So the Grand Marquis, of course, you know, probably their most popular vehicle of the era. Because the cop cars.
Oh, yeah.
The Crown 100%. Vic and the Marquis.
All the old people. Oh, yeah.
The white shoe, white belt.
Yes! I knew a guy that was that. He was this old mobster. His name was Danny Sonata. And he wore the white cap. It drove a powder blue Mercury Marquis.
Matched his pants.
Yep. It did. It did. I swear. Oh, yes.
It's a great car.
Yeah, it was.
Who was doing the commercials? Kate Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And for the first time ever, I realized Kate Jackson had like a Texas accent. Do you remember that? She'd be like, make it Mercury.
Yep. Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah. Charlie's Angels.
Mountaineer.
Ooh, betcha.
Yeah. Right on. Well, so you got some of that, right? We're going to give it to you.
I was tap dancing around some of the answers on that.
Most of the orders, so you can have that one.
Yeah. Right on. Woo!
Tex Yardley.
Yardley, did you hear it? Chalk it up. Put one in the win column for your boy.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ba, 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 ba. Yeah, right. Ba, 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 ba.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this was fun. I'm sorry it took as long as it did.
Yeah.
Especially to get this one recording today because we had technical difficulties.
Yeah, it happens.
It did happen. But I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can always click that subscribe button. And, you know, of course, magically, the next episode will appear in your inbox. I don't recommend standing and holding your breath waiting for it, but we'll get it as soon as we can. And in addition, like we said, be sure to check out V8 TV on YouTube or come to our website at v8speedshop.com to see the latest updates on all the different cars we're working on because there's a lot of them. And some fun new stuff there. Check out that v8speedshop.com/76 playlist.
Ooh, yeah.
Go rock on to the mid-70s. Yeah. Enjoy that. And that's pretty much all I got, man.
That is all I've got, man.
All right. Well, we will see you on the socials. And thanks for tuning in for Mr. Mike Cueball Clark. I'm Kevin Ostie. Reminding you to get your podcasting recording gear together before you start. And we'll talk to you next time on V8 Radio.